Chapter 72. The green Volvo with the taxi markings stopped at the drive of Yazid's villa near Alexandria. The Egyptian army guards, who were posted by the personal order of President Hassan, stiffened into alertness at the gate as the taxi sat there without anyone's getting out. Ammar sat in the back seat, his eyes and jaw heavily bandaged. He wore a blue silk robe and a small red turban. His only medical treatment since escaping Santa Ynez had come during a two-hour visit to a backstreet Buenos Aires surgeon before chartering a private jet to fly him across the ocean to the small airport outside the city. He no longer felt pain in his empty eye sockets. The drugs took care of that, but it was still agony to speak through his shattered jaw. And although he felt a strange sense of tranquility, his mind functioned as ruthlessly and efficiently as ever. "We are here," said Ibn from the driver's seat. Ammar visualized Yazid's villa in his mind, every detail as if he could actually see. "I know," he said simply.
"You do not have to do this thing, Suleiman Aziz." "I have no more hopes or fears," Ammar spoke slowly, fighting the pain of each syllable. "It is the will of Allah."
Ibn swung from behind the wheel, opened the rear door, and helped Ammar to climb out. He led Ammar up the driveway and turned him so he faced the heavily guarded gate.
"The gate is 5 meters in front of you," Ibn spoke haltingly in a voice heavy with emotion. He gently embraced Ammar. "Goodbye, Suleiman Aziz. I will miss you." "Do what you promised, my faithful friend, and we will meet in Allah's garden."
Ibn quickly turned and retraced his steps to the car. Ammar stood without moving until he heard the sound of the engine fade in the distance. Then he approached the gate.
"Stop right there, blind man," ordered a guard. "I have come to visit my nephew, Ahmad Yazid," said Ammar.
The guard nodded to another, who disappeared into a small office and came out with a folder containing 20 or so names.
"Uncle, you say, what's your name?"
Ammar enjoyed making his last play as an impostor. He had collected on an old debt from a colonel in Abu Hamid's defense ministry and received the list of names of those permitted entry into Yazid's villa. He selected one who couldn't be immediately contacted.
"Mustafa Mahfouz."
"Your name is here, all right. Let's see your identification." The guard studied Ammar's counterfeit ID, fruitlessly trying to compare the photo with the heavily bandaged features. "What happened to your face?"
"The car bomb that exploded in the bazaar at El Mansoura. I was struck by flying debris."
"Too bad," the guard said, without sincerity. "You can blame your nephew. It was his followers who set it off." He gestured to a subordinate. "If he clears the metal detector, guide him up to the house." Ammar held out his arms as if he expected to be frisked. "No need for a body search, Mahfouz. If you're carrying a weapon, the machine will spot it." The metal detector revealed nothing and did not sound. The front door. Ammar gloated as the Egyptian army security guard led him up the steps to the front door. No having to sneak in a side passage this time. He sorely wished he could see the look on Yazid's face when they met. He was guided into what he perceived to be a large entry hall by the echo of the guard's boots on the tile floor. He was helped to a stone bench and he sat down.
"Wait here."
Ammar heard the guard mumble to someone before returning to the gate. He sat in silence for several minutes. Then he heard approaching footsteps, followed by a contemptuous voice.
"You are Mustafa Mahfouz?"
Ammar recognized the voice instantly.
"Yes," he answered casually. "Do I know you?"
"We have not met. I am Khaled Fazi, leader of Ahmad's Revolutionary Council."
"I've heard good things about you."
"The arrogant jackass," thought Ammar. "He doesn't know me under the bandages or by the slow rasp of my speech.
It is indeed an honor to meet you."
"Come along," said Fazi, taking Ammar by the arm. "I'll take you to Ahmad. He thought you were still on a mission for him in Damascus. I don't think he's aware of your injuries."
"The result of an assassination attempt 3 days ago," Ammar lied artfully. "I left the hospital only this morning and flew straight here to brief Ahmad firsthand."
"Ahmad will be pleased to hear of your loyalty. He will also be saddened to learn of your injuries. Unfortunately, your visit is poorly timed."
"I cannot meet with him?"
"He is at prayer," Fazi said curtly.
Despite his suffering, Amar could have laughed. He slowly became aware of another presence in the room.
It is vital he receive me.
You may speak freely to me, Mustafa Mahfouz.
The name was spoken with heavy sarcasm.
I will relay your message.
Tell Ahmad it concerns his ally.
Who? Fawzi demanded. What ally?
Topiltzin.
The name seemed to hang in the room for an interminable time. The stillness became intense, and then it was broken by a new voice.
You should have stayed and died on the island, Suleiman, said Ahmad Yazid in a menacing tone.
Amar's calm did not desert him. He had set his genius and last bit of strength for this moment. He was not about to wait for death. He was going to step forward and embrace it. Not for him a life of perpetual darkness and disfigurement. Revenge was his deliverance.
I could not die without standing in your forgiving presence one last time.
Save your babble and remove those stupid bandages. You're losing your touch. Your crude imitation of Mahfouz was fourth-rate for a man of your skills.
Amar did not reply. He slowly unwrapped the bandages until the ends came free, and he dropped them on the floor. Yazid audibly sucked in his breath when he saw the hideous disfigurement of Amar's face. Sadistic blood ran in Fawzi's veins. He stared with the perverted thrill of one who enjoyed the sight of human wreckage.
My payment for my service, Amar slowly rasped. How is it you're alive? Yazid asked, his voice shaken.
My faithful friend Ibn hid me from the American Special Forces for 2 days until he fashioned a raft out of driftwood. After drifting with the current and paddling for 10 hours, by the grace of Allah, we were picked up by a Chilean fishing boat that set us ashore near a small airport at Puerto Williams. We stole an airplane and flew to Buenos Aires, where I chartered a jet to bring us to Egypt.
Death does not come easy to you, muttered Yazid.
You realize you signed your death warrant by coming here, Fawzi purred with anticipation.
I expected little else.
Suleiman Aziz Amar, said Yazid with a trace of sadness. The greatest assassin of his time, feared and respected by the CIA and the KGB, the creator of the most successful assassinations ever carried out, and to think you should end as a filthy, pathetic beggar in the streets.
What are you saying, Ahmad? Asked Fawzi in surprise.
The man is already dead.
Yazid's disgust was slowly turning to satisfaction. Our financial experts will arrange for his wealth and investments to be taken over in my name. Then he will be turned out in the streets with 24-hour guards to make certain he remains in the slums. He will spend the rest of his days begging to exist. That is far worse than a quick death.
You will have me killed when I tell you what I came to say, said Amar conversationally.
I'm listening, said Yazid impatiently.
I dictated a complete 30-page report of the entire Lady Flamborough affair. All names, conversations, times, and dates were carefully itemized. Everything, including my observations on the Mexican part of the operation, and my opinion on the connection between you and Topiltzin. Copies are being read at this moment by the intelligence services of 6 countries and members of their news media. However you deal with me, Ahmad, knowing you're finished.
He broke off abruptly, gasped as his entire head burst into excruciating agony. Fawzi, his face livid and teeth gnashed in rage, struck Amar with his fist. The impact did not carry the solid weight of a planned punch. Fawzi's unthinking, explosive action came from complete loss of self-control. The blow glanced off one side of Amar's injured jaw. A man in good physical condition would have shrugged it off, but Amar teetered on the brink of unconsciousness. Delicate scar tissue around his eyes and jaw split apart. He staggered backward, blindly warding off Fawzi's wild punches with his hands and arms, fighting to clear his mind of the pain, face white, blood streaming.
Stop! Yazid shouted at Fawzi. Can't you see the man is asking to die? He may be lying, hoping we'll kill him here and now.
Amar regained a measure of mental control, positioning the sound of Yazid's voice, the sharp breaths of the maddened Fawzi. He reached out with his left hand and moved slightly forward until he was certain he touched Yazid's right arm.
Then he clutched it and made a lightning motion with his free hand behind his neck. The carbon composite knife was pressed tightly into the slight indentation just to the right of Amar's upper spine by white surgical tape. Known as a utility device by undercover operatives, it was designed to pass safely through metal detectors. Amar tore the thin, triangular-shaped 18-centimeter blade from his back, whipped back his elbow like a piston, then rammed the knife into Yazid's chest just under the rib cage. The vicious thrust lifted the revolutionary Muslim impersonator off his feet. Paul Capister's eyes bulged in shock and terror. His only sound was a hoarse gurgle.
"Farewell, vermin,"
Amar croaked through his bleeding mouth. And then the knife was jerked free, and Amar made a sweeping arc toward the spot where he sensed Fawzi was standing. The knife wasn't designed for a slashing attack, but his hand came in contact with Fawzi's face, and he felt the blade slice the cheek. Amar knew Fawzi was right-handed and always carried a gun, an old 9mm Luger in a holster slung under the left armpit. He fell against Fawzi, blindly attempting to clutch the arrogant fanatic, while shoving the knife upward again. Without sight, his timing was late. Fawzi had swiftly drawn the Luger. He pushed the barrel into Amar's stomach and triggered two rounds before the knife drove into his heart. He dropped the gun and clutched at his chest. He swayed a few steps to his side, staring down with a strange, quizzical look at the knife protruding on an upward angle below his sternum. Finally, his eyes rolled upward and he dropped to the floor only a meter from where Capister had fallen. Amar very slowly sank to the ceramic tile floor and settled on his back. There was no more pain, none at all. He saw visions without his eyes. He could feel his life ebbing away as if it were floating down a stream. His fate had been decided by a man he'd only met briefly. The image came back of the tall man with the green eyes and the set grin. A wave of hate surged and just as quickly passed. Dirk Pitt. The name was etched in the darkening reaches of his mind. He felt a euphoric contentment close over him. His last thought was that Eben would take care of Pitt. Then the slate would be wiped clean.